This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
When someone shows you who they are in public, it's rarely during the big moments. It's in the little ones. They think no one will remember. In the last few days, we've seen more of those small snapshots surface. The hotel desk blow up over a billing error, the instant pivot from anger to charm, and the next day, hallway chat that drifted into talk of knives and sheaths, because obviously that's what you bring up when you're trying to flirt with a stranger in a dim corridor. Add in neighbors describing tapping on windows and campus colleagues flagging predatory boundary crossing behavior. None of it is a courtroom exhibit. All of it is part of the picture, though. And here's why it matters. Micro encounters don't solve a case. They map the social mask, how someone manages impressions, probes for power, and leaks preoccupation when they think it reads casual. The hot cold switch at a hotel desk, it's not just moodiness, it's control theater. I can escalate. I can disarm. I can test what you tolerate. The hallway knife talk, that's not edgy small talk. That's fascination looking for an outlet, maybe validation. And those night noises and window taps that neighbors bring up later, some will be noise. Some might be real. But the cluster tells you what people felt around him, watched, unsettled, and alert. There's a community question baked in as well. What do we do with soft warnings? Creepy isn't a crime. Sexist comments, predatory vibes, boundary pushers, most of that never makes it into a reportable statute. But after the fact, people stack those moments together and ask, was that a flare we ignored? It's not about blame. It's about literacy, knowing what's a red flag versus what's just awkward. What can be the difference between shrugging off risk and documenting a pattern? So let's take these micro encounters seriously without overhyping them. They don't replace hard evidence. They explain the ecosystem that formed around him, the discomfort, the near misses, and the way he showed up when he wanted something and how he behaved when told no. Former FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer is with us, and she's been through enough of these to separate rumor from pattern. Here's the moment we're going to start with. June 2022 in Pullman, he melts down at a hotel desk over a bill, then flips to friendly. The next day, steers a private hallway chat towards knives and sheaths. Thoughts on that and on his fixation? Because it sounds like a theme we keep hearing in these offhanded interactions of Brian Koberger.
Yeah, you know, this is the thing, Tony. It was churning in his mind for so long. This plan, this hope, this crime, this cathartic moment he had hoped to achieve. And you can't just not think about that, you know, when that's what you think about 24/7. So he makes a lot of what I would call almost spontaneous utterances. There's things that are going on in his brain and he just can't help himself. So I find it actually to be pretty normal with somebody that's obsessed.
Yeah. I mean, that really is what it feels like. It's very obsessive behavior to be going on and on and on about these certain objects. And this is before anything has even taken place that he's out there obsessing on it. Who knows what he was like if he had a conversation with him about a knife sheath. Neighbors also described tapping on their windows. And I found this interesting. If he's trying to not be seen, if he's trying to not be known, do you think the tapping has anything to do with Koberger, or is just kind of a little, maybe it is a red herring out there, and folks who were this close to the fire of Brian Koberger, you're going to think maybe anything odd, any odd noise could have been him.
I think it's a combination.
Yeah.
I think it possibly could be him. You know, we talked about other scenarios, whether they could have been him or not in, you know, last time we spoke. So this could have been him, maybe. But like you said, everybody now is thinking, and I know it's not now, but whenever they were interviewed are thinking, whoa, I think this could have been him. I remember this particular incident. I heard anything. But on the flip side of that pancake is, you know, I think he was certainly probably into peeping, could have been into burglarizing, and imagine that excitement you would feel than if you tapped and then, you know, kind of caused them to have a sensation of fear.
Like a recognition that you're there without them knowing that you're there. I mean, that I can see that being something very appealing to a Koberger-like person. There's been so much talk about, okay, see something, say something. A lot of people did. I mean, there was a lot that was said about Brian Koberger. But at the end of the day, you got to do something. But what can you do? What can you do with all these soft warnings that were out there about Brian Koberger? The sexist comments, the predatory-like behavior. But, you know, there was nothing that I think would have necessarily landed him in jail unless they caught him, you know, peeping out someone's window. But the stuff that people were complaining about, yeah, he was a creepy, weird guy. And you can't predict the future, though. I mean, was there anything more that could have been done as everyone was seeing stuff and saying stuff?
I love the words you just use, soft warning. These are warning signs that people see about a lot of people. I mean, there's a lot of weird cats out there. There's people who, you know, misogynistic, who treat women terribly bad, who say really random, odd things. And we always think, oh, well, that guy just socially is awkward. All of this summed up Brian Koberger. And when you look at the other people that do things like this, none of us say, oh my God, that's a mass murderer. I bet he's going to be a serial killer, because it's so rare. It's so rare for those ingredients to equal mass murder. And it's something we just don't really, it doesn't compute.
Sure. I mean, it doesn't always equal serial killer by any means, of course. I mean, the odds that you're going to go that far are pretty out there. But the odds that someone that's behaving in those ways might be doing other things, maybe not murdering, but other things. I don't even know how you'd quantify that. Actually, you know, could look into every single one of those. But we have there we go. I think we popped out and came back for a second. So many things that we would say might be soft warnings. Is Koberger a narrative tale? Is there anything we can learn from soft warnings? Or is it just, this is the world we live in? Do we need to do something more about these soft warnings so they're not so soft?
Well, he has such soft warnings, right?
Yeah.
When you look at, as an example, the murderer that just got done with the Annunciation shooting, and he had hard warnings. Right. He had guns, bulletproof vests. He, you know, before the attacks was, you know, writing horrible things and putting it on YouTube and talking in Russian. So when you compared those, which I call those hard warnings, Koberger's weren't really. And I could see why people just overlooked this behavior. But I will say, with the long running of the soft warnings, his family certainly were aware of. Like you said, it's not something that you say, okay, these weird behaviors equal they're going to be a serial killer. Yeah. But wow, maybe we should be looking out for getting this guy some help.
All right, let's land this where most conversations don't, on the uncomfortable middle ground between see something and say something. And what are you legally supposed to do with creepy? We've got a cluster of moments, the hotel desk escalation, the charm pivot, the knife and sheath chatter, neighbors spooked by taps on glass, colleagues who said his behavior tripped wires. Individually, none of those are a silver bullet. Together, they read as a pattern of testing. Can I push you? Can I unsettle you? Can I get you to accept my frame? That's not social awkwardness, that's calibration. And if you're looking for a takeaway that actually helps, it's this. Document patterns early. When conduct skirts the line, boundary violations, targeted pestering, fixation topics that keep resurfacing, if you're around somebody like that, write it down. reported up the chain that exists where you are, campus, workplace, property management. Patterns either fade under daylight or they sharpen under scrutiny. Both outcomes are useful, not because you'll catch a killer every time, but because you'll raise the cost of escalation for the tiny percentage of people who are looking to escalate. And for storytellers, us included, resist the urge to turn every odd encounter into prophecy. There's a lot of weird cats, as Jennifer put it, who will never cross the line into violence. Soft warnings are signals, not sentences. The value here is literacy, recognizing hot-cold control plays, understanding why weapons talk isn't edgy foreplay, and clocking the difference between awkward and coercive. That kind of fluency doesn't eliminate risk, but it lowers the odds that a pattern hides in plain sight. Big picture, the photos in the apartment show us inside what he cleaned when he thought it mattered, what he ignored when he thought it didn't. These micro encounters show the outside, how he managed strangers, how he tried to charm his way past no, and how his obsessions leaked into when he believed, or leaked into what he believed would be harmless. Put them together and the portrait is less mystery and more map. If you're listening and thinking, I've met that guy, here's your marching order. Trust your read. Like I said, document what you see and tell someone who's tasked with tracking patterns. And if you have no one to tell yet, just keep documenting. Because once you get enough and you actually have a pattern, not just here's one creepy thing, here's the pattern of creepy things, people pay more attention. Not everything turns into a headline. And thank God for that. But quiet paper trails do save lives. That's where we'll leave it for now. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening to us or watching us so you don't miss any of our coverage on this and the many cases we follow for you right here. And let us know your thoughts in the comment section as well. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.